We'll move now to appeal 25-2019, Anna's Cafe Place LLC versus Village of Westchester et al. We'll begin with oral argument from the appellant, Mr. Bolton.
May it please the court. Your Honors, I'd like to use my short amount of time as an observant 5 minutes rebuttal to hit what I believe in some of the key issues in them, but it's admittedly an area of law in the circuit, which, as the district court said, is in flux. However, we believe that the unique fact of this case, that the admissions of the village president were that there was animus and that this license would never, under any circumstances, ever be granted to this man, presents a unique circumstance that gives definition to some of the currents within that flux, Your Honor. I was struck, Your Honors, in reading the Olek opinion in the Supreme Court, that they provided a definition for that Sioux City Bridge case that didn't mention irrationality in the decision under the 14th Amendment. They said the 14th Amendment is protection against intentional and arbitrary discrimination, not irrationality. So when we talk about the rational basis test, which was employed by the court below, the problem becomes that the rational basis test becomes an unfortunate shield to intentional harm. I present the scenario that if a mayor actually wrote an affidavit saying it was all intentional, it was animus, I meant every bit of it, it had nothing to do with the statutes, I just wanted to harm you, signed under oath, but because the district court would find that I had a rational basis for doing it, you lose. And we'd ask the court, is that justice? We don't believe it is. And we believe that that is tantamount to what occurred here because the village president admitted to Michael Manza as to what was going on. And we presented in our amended complaint, Your Honor, all of the prior actions with regard to the parking violations of the parking easement, all the previous history of Michael Manza and exposing the red light camera scandals of the Western suburbs, to show that there was not, it's not casual, there was actual real animus politically against this man, and it was visited upon his business. And while the district court said that animus towards Michael Manzo was not animus towards Anna's Cafe, that's not what the mayor said. The mayor said, no, it's because it is, you're never going to get that license because of you, Mike. They want you. And you just, Judge Easterbrook, I carefully read your concurrence in the Bell Marcel case, in which you stated that intention never had any effect. And I believe that this case presents strains upon that analysis, because if we go down that road, that any time that there is a conceivable rational basis, we are creating a potential shield for intentional harm. For example, if a man is holding another man by the hand over a cliff face, he intentionally lets go on video, would we say that, well, because the grip might have slipped, we should absolve him because it might have happened by other means anyway. So his intent in what he did didn't matter. We would say no. We would say there's intentional harm here. And that intentional harm has to be addressed under the Equal Protection Agreement, Equal Protection Clause. So that winds us into, Your Honors, the issue of Ms. Headley. Because what happened here was the rationale is there was no license there. But in the amended complaint, we demonstrate that the reason why there was no license available was that the village official directed them into filing a separate application on their own, as opposed to trying to renew the existing license for the Christopher Speakeasy restaurant.
Mr. Bolton, did Anna's ever purchase or enter into an executed lease for Christopher's?
They did not actually enter into an agreement, Your Honor. They had an oral agreement with the owner of the land who would open the place for his nephew. But no, Your Honor, I have to say there was no actual executed document. There was an oral agreement among them, which is why Manzo and Anna's were trying to get the moon towards Christmas.
Yeah. Don't the Westchester ordinances prohibit the issuance of a license like this to someone who does not own or lease the premises?
Well, the way we read them, Your Honor, the new owner is going to have to go through the same process. It isn't barred. But there's no automatic renewal like that. You cannot hide behind the prior owner. You must show on your own, as part of your application, that you meet the requirements of the Village of Westchester. We see that as a protection of the village, that people can't slip in behind one license when they're not appropriate for the license, and therefore there's no scrutiny. No, the new owner is going to have to prove their worth.
So they had to file a new application under village regulations, right?
They, as part of their application for the renewal, I apologize, renewal drawings. As a part of their renewal application, they would have had to have demonstrated before this panel that they were property owners and they met all the requirements.
Only the renewal, not the original? Excuse me, only the renewal application?
They would have enough for both, seems to us, because they would have been new applicants on their own, or they would have been the new owners coming in on behalf of Christopher. So there would have been scrutiny either way. We agree with that. But what happened was the rational basis used here was, well, there was no license because there were only two. There was Christopher's. And there was Anna's on Roosevelt. So since there was no new licensee to apply for, there was a rational basis. But that also overlooks that the village had the opportunity to, the village had the ability to create a third license if they wanted to. This is completely within the parameters of that village trustee, of the village review board and the village board itself.
That licensure decision includes discretion, correct?
Yes, Your Honor. I don't disagree with that. I'm
How
simply
does that
saying.
affect then the allegation that there's a problem?
But Your Honor, that there's a property right in the not an application. You understand that there's a property right in the license itself. So it would have been a property right had we gone down the license, gone down the road of renewal, as opposed to simply applying on their own. So I think we believe, and we intended to a trial, that that was part of the whole game here. That take them away from the actual existing license, make them apply on their own. They are easy targets once they do that. You can easily deny it without any sort of possibility of liability. And I think I bluntly, Your Honor, our contention was that Mr. Manzo was set up by the village time after time after time. None of this was unintentional. And then they go to the authority, Ms. Healy says, hey, well, she was a village economic director. They admit in their brief that she was the point person on applications, but most tellingly, she was the one who came back to Manzo and said, oh, if you drop gaming out of your application, we might consider it. Which in this context is a little like going to a liquor store and saying, well, if you stop selling liquor and only sell cigarettes, we might give you a license. It defeats the whole purpose. So it was, but this is the woman that came to them with that offer drawn. So to say that she had no authority, it seems to us, that's a question for discovery. That's a question for fact development. That's a question for further down the road. That's a question that can't be decided on a 12B6 motion. Your Honors, it also, going back to the rational basis, Your Honor, for one moment, we are not asking this court to abolish the rational basis test in any way, shape, or form. We're simply saying that this case, presenting the admission of the village president that there was animus and animus motivated the decision that happened here, although I would also add, Your Honor, there was no decision. That application was never ruled on.
To this day.
Excuse me?
To this day.
To this day, Your Honor, as well, Your Honor, that parking variance that we described as part of the animus. That's never been ruled on in the Bill of Westchester to this day, 5 years later. So our point is that there's more evidence of animus in the way this worked than just the expressions of the village president, Your Honor. But what we're saying, Your Honor, is that the unique circumstances of this case where there is that admission, tests like rational basis and comparator, that this case with that admission and that witness is available to testify, he'll be deposed, he'll be called to trial. He's now the ex-village president. But I'd also add that his successor also came in and talking about the variance and said, Mike, you're not getting that variance because they're against you because of red light cameras. Our point, Your Honor, is that when we get that kind of an admission, it takes this case away from those tests. Those tests are excellent, we think, in some ways for divining discrimination. But we think that there's a mistake when they are used to simply define discrimination. Because, as I said, they can become a shield for intentional harm, which isn't right. Your Honor, unless there are questions, I've raised the points that I thought we needed to raise here. But the court has some questions, I'd be happy to answer.
Very good. You may reserve the remainder of your
I'm
time as
reserving
well.
my 5 minutes, Your Honor.
Excellent. Thank you very much,
Thank
Mr.
you.
Bolton.
Thank you.
We'll move now, Mr. Warren, to you for oral argument on behalf of the applicant.
Good morning. May it please the court. Thank you very much for your time this morning. What was glossed over by the appellant is the standing issue that we raised in our brief, and it really is central to why we're even before you. The allegations that Mr. Bolton has raised about the non-renewal of a license saying that they were denied the ability to go forward and renew their license. It wasn't their license. As you point out, they never purchased the Christopher Speakeasy business. They never obtained any of its assets. Therefore, they are not in a position to be able to argue that their due process rights were denied. They did not have a right to a liquor license because they did not complete the purchase of Christopher Speakeasy. With each complaint,
Sounds like your contention is that they lose on the merits. What does that have to do with standing? As I understand it, standing requires injury in fact caused by the defendant and remediable by the court. They want a license. The lack of a license is caused by the defendants, and it's remediable by a decision requiring the defendant to give them a license. Now, it may be that they're not entitled to that, but how is that a lack of standing?
Yes, Your Honor, I agree that our position would be victorious either way. And in fact, on the
No,
first...
there's a big difference between lacking standing and losing on the merits. And you seem to be eliding that difference. You're saying that people who can't win on the merits lack standing. The Supreme Court has held many times, Bell against Hood is a great example, but that's not true.
There's a distinction in this case because on the first or the second amended complaint, the first motion to dismiss that was granted, there was no allegation of there being a renewal in process. And on that basis, the village succeeded in saying that there was no property right. And on the merits, the village was successful. What was raised in this second amended complaint is the idea of a renewal license. And that is where the standing issue comes in, because they are alleging that their license was not renewed. And that's where the village failed and, you know, denied their constitutional rights. But they're not the entity that can bring that claim. That entity is Christopher Speakeasy, because they are the ones who possess that license. There was
Aren't they also seeking damages?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Aren't they also seeking damages?
Yes, they are seeking damages as well.
So do you agree they have at least standing to seek damages?
They do not have standing to seek damages from the non-renewal of their license, Your Honor, because they did not have a license to begin with. The damages that they would seek, if their allegations were just about the denial of an original liquor license, then if they had that right, then they could claim damages. But just on the basis of not having a renewal, that is not a right to damages. With this standing issue, if you looking at the case law on this, to your point, there must be an imminent suffering of a damage, a real or immediate injury in fact. General prohibition against raising another person's legal rights in Worth v. Selden. The harm and benefits must be to the plaintiff. And here, the harm was not to the plaintiff because they did not have a license that they were trying to renew, and the benefit would not be to plaintiff. If this court were to find that the renewal was improperly not considered by the village, then the benefit would be to Christopher Speakeasy, which has long ceased to exist.
Is there a restaurant or other business not being operated in the Christopher Speakeasy position now, but location now?
I believe there is, Your Honor, yes.
Was it a subsequent sale to a different party, or was it the original party? Do you know anything about that?
I am not aware of the circumstances of that sale, other than that a business license was given to a business license separate from this type of license given to that entity at 3 or 4 years later.
So a business license, but perhaps not liquor.
I'm not sure of the specifics, Your Honor.
How many I-1 licenses are issued in the Village of Westchester now?
Currently, there are, I'm not sure, Your Honor, currently. At one point, there was only one. When Christopher Speakeasy ceased to exist, there was one. I'm not aware of that number increasing. But it speaks to an important point in the merits of this case, which is we're talking about legislation. The plaintiff has raised the idea that there was animus shown by the former Village President Tuso, saying that the Village Board is not going to do anything for you. What it is that the Village Board is not going to do is to pass legislation. It's to pass an ordinance. That's the thing that he's saying the Village Board will not agree to. It's not about a hearing. There would be no hearing before the Village Board. The Village Board doesn't get to decide who gets a liquor license. They only decide whether there is a liquor license to obtain. So This is a question of an applicant trying to force the hand of a village, of a municipal board, to change its own ordinances. And they have no right to that. They have no ability to claim that they are being discriminated against because a municipal body doesn't want to change its ordinances. There are, you know, every elected body has politics involved, and the accusation that the village has to go with whatever an applicant proposes and change their ordinances, that would kill the two-party system, which maybe, you know, some people wouldn't be opposed to, but that's what ultimately would happen here.
Why wasn't the license application denied? Why is it still pending?
There was no application to grant ordina. If there had been the denial would be if there was a reason to not give that license that exists to the applicant. But there was no license to give. There's nothing that the village had to do that because they applied for something that didn't exist. What happens in practicality is by applying for a license that doesn't exist, you're requesting an action by the village board. You're asking them to change their ordinances, but you don't have any right to a hearing on whether they're going to or not. You've simply made it known that you would like there to be a change in the code, and the village board then has the discretion to decide whether or not to do so.
So the board doesn't then return the licensing fee and communicate in any way back to the applicant?
The licensing fee is part of the processing. The application was still processed. It was looked over. It was reviewed by members of the village and village board. As the allegations of the complaint state, they had an appearance before the village board. The attorney for the applicant presented in front of the village board. Melissa Headley, the community economic development director, went back to the applicant and suggested, here's a way that we would be willing to change our ordinances for you. Would you go along with this? And they denied it. They had an opportunity, a back and forth. They knew full well that they were not getting their license or not getting the creation of a license. With regard to the equal protection argument and the idea of animus being enough to subvert rational basis, that is not what this court has consistently held in many other cases after Oleg. Oleg really didn't deal with the idea of rationality, but this court has consistently stated afterwards that a rational basis is something that can overcome animus. If you look at the case of, it's Fairs Pawn LLC, the Indiana Department of Financial Institutions, rational basis for government action defeats a class of one claim, animus or no. There only needs to be a conceivable rational basis. It doesn't need to be an established or proven rational basis or even alleged, as long as it is conceivable. And in this case, there is a conceivable rational basis that was disclosed to the applicant that the village board did not want to increase gaming. They didn't want to give this type of license that is a particular type of license. There are other licenses that allow gaming. There are other licenses that allow liquor. They did not want to grant an I-1 license that was both a bar and a gaming facility. That's why they proposed something alternative. So there was a rational basis, animus or no, assuming all allegations of the complaint are true, that doesn't matter that there was animus because there still was a rational basis for them to fall back. Flying J Inc. versus City of New Haven, rational basis and animosity can coexist. And that's what has occurred here. I would like to close on the discretion idea, that there is broad discretionary authority to regulate liquor licenses. Under the Liquor Control Act of 1934, the village board has the authority to determine not only the number of licenses, the classifications of licenses, but the process for even obtaining a liquor license. The discretion has been given by the state to the village board. And that is what the village board exercised here in this case. There's no prohibition against choosing not to adopt legislation. That is a discretionary decision by the legislators, by the village board, the trustees. Katz Crank versus Haskett, a case in this circuit in 2016, stated that you cannot base a class of one on actions within the government's discretion. And that is what we have here. There are no further questions. I thank you very much, and I ask you to affirm the lower court's ruling.
Thank you, Mr. Morton. Mr. Bolton, we'll move now back to you for rebuttal argument.
May it please the court. I believe that what has happened at the district court and now what's happened in my colleague's argument is that it is trees and forests going on here. They're trying to make you look at individual trees. Well, there's this or that. We ask you to step back and look at the forest of this entire scheme against Michael Manzo, not just these individual. Yes, the board had discretion. Yes, they appeared before the board once for discussion with no action ever taken. And the mayor saying there's no action ever going to be taken. However, I also point out that while they talk about that Christopher's licensing, I only urge the court to remember that our people were deflected from that by direction of the person who was the intake person for the village. They were directed not to do it. File your own one, and they accepted the direction of the village official. As far as the some of the, I believe my colleague is a little bit guilty of extrapolating facts outside of the complaint on 12b6 to try to bring up the discretion and other elements of the board. This is a 12b6 motion. We are on the facts presented in the assent and complaint, not the opinions about what the board could or couldn't do. Our third point, Your Honor, is that the board had discretion to issue a new license. The board had pretty much discretion to do whatever it wanted. It was not handcuffed by its regulations because it could simply issue another I-1 license. As far as the animus or no, I believe, Your Honor, I believe that gets us to the crux of the issue, that if that rule, animus or no, is cloaking intentional harm, there has to be an exception when there is admitted in the complaint with facts taken as true, that the village president, who could else be a spokesman for this village but the village president, stated that there was animus and stated not only that there was animus, but that animus motivated the fact that they were never going to get a license. It seems simply seems to us the crux of this case, Your Honor, is that when that admission is right there in the complaint and that witness could testify to it, then we are beyond the ability of tests of law that are simply divining discrimination, and we are improperly using them to define discrimination. When you look at that quote, and I'll leave with that quote, Your Honor, from the Supreme Court that was cited in OLEC in their opinion affirming, the purpose of the Equal Protection Clause is to secure every person within the state's jurisdiction against intentional and arbitrary discrimination. Irrationality isn't in there. It is not a protection against irrational government. It is protection against discrimination by the government. And when that discrimination is plain upon the face of the complaint, that case has to be allowed to go forward. We ask you to vacate the order and refer the case back for further proceedings. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Bolton. Thank you, Mr. Morton. The case will be taken under advisement.